Good morning, everybody, and welcome to episode 18 of our live monthly Q&A with St Ives Wills Trust and its estates team. It's March 2024, as the slide says there in front of you. On the screen there is our speaker, delighted to welcome him back, and that's Edward Paddington, who is a trainee solicitor in the Wills Trust and Estates team here at St Ives, and he's becoming bit of a repeat performer. So great to have Ed with us here again this morning. Exactly same format as with all our previous sessions. In front of you are three questions that Ed's going to answer today, and they are questions that you've sent in to us, and we still have a massive amount of questions that we're working through across all of these sessions. So thank you for continuing to send them in. We are getting through them as quickly as possible in these sessions, but it's great that we're still getting those sent through to us. So without any further ado, I am going to pass you over to Ed and just say good morning. Over to you.
Yeah, good morning, everyone. It's good to be back. As David has said, it is spring. Finally get some good weather, so that's all well and good. So it's business as usual. We've got a few questions from you. It's always good to be answering these, so I'll just crack on. David, could you ask the first question?
Absolutely. Question one, what is usually included at start of a will?
Yeah, so at the start of the will, you usually have what is the opening words, and what these do is they identify that you are making the will, and they also identify the nature of the will. So when you're starting off with your will, you should state the full name and full address of the person that's making the will, and that's so they're identified. If they hold any property in any other name, then it's usually helpful just to state this other name, and just indicate that the person making the will is also known by that name. You should also include a statement saying that the document is the last will. So you'll see there's quite a lot in wills. And this just helps demonstrate that the person making the will had the intention to make the will. And that's really important because that's a legal requirement when you're making wills. Okay. Another important point to mention as well is that where a person who is making the will has made a will to deal with assets outside of the UK, it's really important to just make clear what assets, you know, your English will is relating to. So say you got property in Spain, got a very nice fancy villa, and you've already been to your Spanish solicitors to make a Spanish will to deal with that property, then you'll just need to be clear when you're making the English will, you know, what assets that will relates to. Also, a good point to mention is if you're making a will and you intend to marry or enter a civil partnership in the future, and you want the will to continue to be valid, this is where you can just include a statement just saying that the will is made in expectation of that marriage and it's not to be revoked by that marriage or civil partnership taking place. Because that marriage or civil partnership would revoke the will, essentially. So what you'd say in your will is you just say something along the lines of that you're getting married to your soon-to-be husband, and that your will is not to be revoked by that marriage. Obviously, the wording will be a lot more official than what I've just said, but that's along the right lines. And as I said, if you don't have that statement in, then the will would be automatically revoked by that marriage. So make sure you've got that in if it's relevant. All right. So time for the second question.
Okay, so question two, can I give away any excess income to my children to decrease my inheritance tax liability?
Yes, you can. You can do that. So you can make gifts if they're made out of your part of your normal expenditure, the part of your income, and they leave you with enough income to keep up the usual standard of living, then you can use what is called the normal expenditure out of income exemption. And the three points I've just mentioned, the gift is made part of your normal expenditure, made part of your income, and leaves you with enough income to keep up usual standard. These three points are the three elements of the exemption that need to be satisfied. So what that means is, because I know that's a lot of formal wording, but what it means is that if you've got any surplus income that you're not using, and you know this can happen as you get older and you've got less things to pay for, you can have a bit of money set aside where you're not using it anymore, you know, you could set up a standing order or something otherwise to just give those that extra income to your children, and then you could claim it under that exemption. And as I say, as long as you have enough to maintain your usual standard of living after these payments, then you could satisfy the requirements. So in the situation where you're giving too much away and now you can't pay your energy bills or whatever it is that is the usual standard of living, you know, if you can't keep up with it, then that just wouldn't apply. But the thing with this exemption is it is quite difficult to claim. So I'll just preface it with that. It can be quite difficult, because you'll need to demonstrate a regular pattern of gifting over a reasonable amount of time. And what is normal expenditure for one person isn't necessarily so for the other. So it's quite variable. So with that in mind, just make sure that you keep very, very good records of these payments that you've made. So don't just rely on your bank statements, because, you know, after you pass away, it'll be quite difficult for your executors if all they have is that as evidence of that exemption. You know, I would keep more records than that. Keep it very stringent, very tight. Just keep a very good record of payments you've made. And the better they are, the easier it will be to claim that exemption and show that you've been given these payments. But as I say, if you're unsure, you know, you can just speak to a solicitor and just see how best you can use that exemption and how to set it up and things. Okay, well, that's useful. So we've got the third and final question.
Absolutely, final question for today, and you'd be amazed actually quite how much this one comes up. How do I cancel a will I have made?
Yes, so you can cancel your will, well, revoke your will. That is certainly possible, and there's quite a few ways you can do it. So the first is express revocation. So you can do this by drafting a new will, and then you could include a revocation clause in that will. And essentially what a revocation clause is it's to indicate that all earlier wills and codicils that you've made are revoked, so cancelled essentially. These clauses usually appear near the beginning of the will. So as long as you have this in your new will, then it will revoke your previous wills and codicils. And just going back to what I said in the first question, because that's quite relevant as well, is if you've made another will dealing with assets outside of the UK. So as I said, you know, my example before, you've got your assets in Spain. It's just important to consider whether these are to be revoked or not. So you should just make that clear in the will, whether you're dealing with those sort of wills. Another way is implied revocation. And this is quite a funny one, but basically what it means is that any later will you make is implied to revoke your earlier ones, but it's only to the extent that the new will is inconsistent with the earlier wills. So say if your new will gives a gift that's totally different to your new will, so it's changing it up, you're giving £50,000 to your granddaughter rather than to your daughter or something else like that, then these provisions would revoke your earlier will to that extent, but it won't revoke the whole thing. So whilst that's fine, an express revocation using the revocation clause, which I've just mentioned, is the better option really, because it will just avoid that risk of an early will not being totally revoked. So it's best usually just to draft a new will and just get that revocation clause in. And then it's a fresh start, fresh will, nice and tidy, and you've got your earlier will that's completely revoked now. And this actually goes back as well to what I've discussed in the first question as well, is you can also, you know, your will's automatically revoked by marriage or civil partnership. So if you're in the situation where you've made your will, and you're not making one soon and you're getting married in a couple months, and then that marriage would revoke the will. That being said, on the flip side, if you've made the will and you're totally happy with it, and you don't want it to be revoked and you're getting married soon, then you know you want to have a look at that, because once you get married it's going to be revoked. So that's always something to bear in mind and something that people won't really consider. especially if perhaps you've made your will whilst you've been with your fiance and you don't think it's going to be changed once you get married because you're with the same person, but it will be revoked. So that's just something to bear in mind. The last way you can do it is, and you might be thinking this is the most common sense way, but it's to destroy your will. So if you're doing this option, you as the person who's made the will need to intentionally destroy your will. And it's important that you intend to destroy it, you know, whether that's ripping it up, shredding it, throwing it in the fire, whatever you like, because you need to intend to do that. It won't be valid if you've done it by accident. You can ask someone to destroy your will for you. That is possible. But you need to give them that direction, and you need to be in their presence while they destroy it. There was a case where something like this happened, and essentially the person who made the will asked their solicitor to destroy the will. The solicitor destroyed it, but they weren't in the donor's presence, the person who made the will. So again, you need to be with them whilst they're doing, you need to be in their presence. The other important thing to know, as well as the intention point, is there needs to be actual destruction. So you need intention, you need destruction. If you've got intention, but you know you haven't actually destroyed your will, then again, this won't be sufficient to revoke your will. And there is a good case about this. It's called Cheese and Lovejoy. And essentially what happened in this is the person making the will, so they got their current will and they just crossed out parts of it. And they just said, they crossed out the parts making gifts and just said all of these are revoked, and they just wrote it on the will. And so when it came to the court seen the will and they said, you know, it's still legible. We can still see the gifts that you're making. So it's not destroyed. It's still standing up. So, you know, if you're just crossing it out, just be aware of that. If it's still legible, it's still going to stand. So if you're going to destroy your will, you have to do it properly. You have to do it intentionally, as I say, by shredding it, burning it, or otherwise. Whatever technique you use, just don't hurt yourself doing it. That's maybe an important point that's not necessarily legal there, but yeah. Okay, so I hope that's useful. That just caps off the final question. As I say, it's been good answering these as always, and I'll just pass you back to David.
Thank you much, Ed. Enjoyed listening to that as always. I've just popped Ed's details back on the screen there. Should you like to get in touch, discuss anything he's raised today or indeed in any of the sessions, please don't hesitate to get in touch with him. Just another little note from me. We continue to work hard to produce, release and deliver useful and relevant content, articles, podcasts, blogs, all of which can be found on our website, www.sintons.co.uk. In about 10 minutes time, that'll include all 18 episodes of this live monthly Q&A with Sintons Wills Trust and Estates team. If you haven't heard enough from us by that point, you can also follow the team on Twitter as well, at Sintons Law and at Sintons PC. As I said, Ed's details are back on there on the screen. For those of you listening to this in podcast, For those of you listening in podcast format, I should say, Ed can be contacted via telephone 019-1226-7855 via email edward.pattinson@sintons.co.uk. I did mention at the outset, thank you once again for the amount of people who are sending in their questions each month, but also people are taking the time to actually tune in live to these sessions every second working Friday of the month, live at 10 a.m. on Teams. So thank you for that. We've got a record number of people in attendance this morning, so that is fantastic. And the amount of people who are continuing to listen to and watch the recordings afterwards, thank you for that. We're staggered by the numbers. We generally are so pleased that these sessions continue to add value to you. And whilst they do, we'll keep recording them every month and sending through to you. We'll be back on the second working Friday of April, live 10 a.m. Teams on a Friday, and we look forward to seeing you then. Enjoy the rest of your March, and we'll speak to you next month. Stay safe, everyone. Thank you.